Today's scripture reading is from Luke chapter 24, verses 13 through 35. And I hope that you'll take the time to read that passage. It's often called the story of the road to Emmaus. And when you read it, what you will hear is this. It happened on that same Easter Sunday. Later that day, two people were walking from Jerusalem to the village of Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. One was named Cleopas. We're not told the name of the other person, but it would certainly make sense that that might be Mrs. Cleopas. And as they're walking along the road toward the village of Emmaus, suddenly Jesus joins them, but they don't recognize him for whatever reason. The risen Christ is walking with them, and he asks them what they were talking about as they walked along the road. And they say to him, "Are you the only person coming out of Jerusalem that does not know what's been happening there these days?" And I suppose, kind of playing dumb, he said, "What things?" And to get them to tell him more. And they say, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a mighty prophet, and we thought he was going to be the one to save Israel. But then the authorities turned him over, and he was crucified. And all this happened 3 days ago. And then this morning, the women in our group went to the tomb, but they could not find his body. And angels said that he had been raised from the dead." And having told Jesus that, Jesus says to them, "How foolish you are, how slow to understand." And then he goes on to explain how the Messiah must suffer and be glorified. And he goes back from the books of Moses, the earliest books in the Hebrew Bible, and shows them all of the things that demonstrated that the Messiah would be coming and that he embodied the Messiah. So they're walking along, and they arrive at the village of Emmaus, and Jesus appears to be going a little bit farther. But Mr. and Mrs. Cleopas say, "Why don't you stay with us? Darkness is coming. It's getting late." And so Jesus goes into their home. And they prepare a meal for him, and they give him, as the guest, the honor of offering the blessing. And so they're at the table, and he takes the bread, he blesses it, he breaks it, and he gives it to them. And suddenly their eyes were opened, and they recognize him. And immediately he disappears from their sight. And they say to one another, "Wasn't it amazing how our hearts seemed to burn within us as he talked with us while we were walking on the road?" And they decide they have to go back to Jerusalem to find the other disciples and tell them what happens. And that's exactly what they did. They got up and went back the 7 miles, found the disciples, who were very excited because they said, "The Lord has risen and has appeared to Peter." And so then Mr. and Mrs. Cleopas describe everything that happened to them on the road and how they recognized Jesus in the breaking of the bread. It was about 5:30 in the morning when I pulled up to the terminal at Akron Canton Airport to pick up my niece, Audrey. She was supposed to have flown to Cleveland Hopkins Airport, which is only 7 miles from our home. Instead, she ended up at Akron Canton, an additional 55 miles farther away. Oh, and she did not arrive by airplane either. But let me explain this. Several years ago, Audrey had spent a college semester studying in New York City. The term was over, so she was going to fly back to her home on the West Coast. Her father, my older brother Joe, had booked for her the least expensive airfare back to Eugene, Oregon. In this bargain itinerary was a transcontinental hopscotch to various airports across the country. Brother Joe wanted to use this rare opportunity for his daughter to visit with Uncle John and Aunt Mary in Cleveland for a day or two. Well, about the time that Audrey's flight should have been leaving from LaGuardia for Cleveland Hopkins Airport, I started getting texts from her telling me that her flight was delayed. I don't remember if it was equipment problems or weather or what. And then more texts saying it was delayed some more. And then again a few more times. Finally, the airline canceled the flight. Come back tomorrow morning, they told the long line of weary and frustrated passengers. Well, as often happens in such experiences of shared frustration, Audrey got to know the women standing near her in line. Two of them were from Akron. One was from nearby Alliance, Ohio. They were co-workers who had gone to New York together on business. She heard them discuss their options: camp out at the airport, or try to take a shuttle to a nearby hotel for a few hours rest. And then one said, "You know, if we rented a car, we could be home before that flight even takes off tomorrow morning, if it takes off at all." Quick agreement among the Akron trio had one woman running off to the rental car counter. The other two looked at their young college student friend doomed to be stranded there in the Big Apple. "Audrey," they said, "Akron isn't too far from Cleveland. If we could get you to Akron and we dropped you off at some safe public spot, say, the Akron airport, would that help you?" Audrey said that if Akron wasn't too far from Cleveland, she thought her uncle would be willing to drive there to pick her up. And that's how I ended up fetching my niece Audrey at 5:30 in the morning from a distant airport that she didn't fly into. Now, how did those three businesswomen come to decide to offer hospitality to who was, in effect, a total stranger? If you could see and hear my niece, she doesn't come across as threatening in the least. Tall, slight, quiet voice, exuding a certain small-town innocence. All that, along with the casual conversations that she had shared with those women, all that stirred their hearts to open their lives to her, inviting her into their fellowship, giving her a space to snooze on an impromptu road trip overnight in a rental car. Audrey's spur-of-the-moment invite reminded me of the experience Jesus had while walking the road from Jerusalem to the village of Emmaus with Mr. and Mrs. Cleopas. Those three had become acquainted by a chance encounter on the road, and they developed that acquaintance through conversation. Well, dusk began to settle as they approached the couple's destination, and they invited Jesus, a stranger, they invited him to accept their offer of food to eat and a place to spend the night. They invited him right into the privacy of the very home where they ate and slept and shared life together. In some ways, it was like an episode of that program, Undercover Boss. Mr. and Mrs. Cleopas didn't realize that they knew who Jesus was. But they felt a connection with their fellow traveler. They resonated with his description of God: gracious, not demanding; forgiving, not condemning; inclusive, not judgmental. When people study the story of the road to Emmaus in Luke chapter 24, the usual focus deals with what Jesus did when preparing to dine with his hosts. He took bread, blessed it, broke it, and gave it. The very same actions that he did at the Last Supper: took, blessed, broke, gave. It was in these actions that Mr. and Mrs. Cleopas recognized Jesus. But reading the story this time, I was struck by something else. On another level, the story of the road to Emmaus is a story about hospitality, about connecting with strangers. This may seem like a bad time to talk about making connections with strangers. We're doing our best to stay away, not just from strangers, but from friends and family who aren't part of our households. And it seems counter to our experience of Christianity to be keeping our distance. The reality is we just don't know when we'll be able to come together again in churches or restaurants, stadiums, theaters. And even then, it may be some time after gatherings are allowed before you feel comfortable and safe coming together with others. But until then, we can plant seeds of hospitality where we are, inviting into our lives, so to speak, the people we encounter, even in these days of limited mobility and interaction. There are so many opportunities for us to extend hospitality. Perhaps it's the appreciation that you can show the employee who is bringing your meals to your apartment each day while your dining room remains closed for safety's sake. Maybe you can extend the hospitality of Christ-like patience toward the people who seem oblivious to your desire to observe proper social distancing and other behaviors intended for the common good. Or what if you offered hospitality through positivity? Day by day, the reality becomes clearer that a lot of things we look forward to each spring and summer, and maybe even into autumn, they're going to be very, very different from what we are used to, or they won't be possible at all this year. Sports, concerts, weddings and funerals and worship, recreation activities, travel, vacation Bible school, parties, reunions, and on and on. We feel the weight of loss just thinking about what we'll miss out on in the months ahead. So how can we be the ones inviting our families and neighbors and communities to experience the hospitality of optimism, not ignoring our loss, but highlighting all that is still available to us? For example, expressing gratitude through brief phone calls or simple notes of thanks, perhaps to neighbors or teachers or first responders, local or state officials. Or bringing new life to old games or puzzles, collecting dust in your home, which would find new life when shared with families in your area. Or the joy of conversations over the fence or across the street. Appreciating Mother Nature's unfolding beauty of spring and summer, which proceeds without concern for our stay-at-home restrictions. Or being transported to a different time and place by a book to read or a film to watch. The opportunity to use our health and strength to lend a hand to more vulnerable people who need some help with ordinary tasks like shopping or simple home maintenance in order to remain safe. And from the other point of view, if we are in that class of folks who are more vulnerable because of age or illness, we can offer the hospitality of appreciation by accepting the offer of people who are able and willing to help us out in these unique times. Seeing today's world with eyes of faith, you can lift your spirits and the spirits of others by recognizing all the blessings that still fill our lives. Now, we may be accustomed to thinking of hospitality as the act of welcoming someone into our space, but hospitality can be more than that and more subtle than that too. Being generous with your attention and your time, that's a way of showing hospitality. Showing true concern for someone is an act of hospitality. Displaying exceeding patience, graciously forgiving, assuming positive intent on the part of others. Those are all ways of sharing the gift of hospitality. In the midst of this time when we're staying closer to home than ever before, it might seem out of place to encourage us to think about how we can grow in our ability to offer hospitality. Because our range of activities is restricted and the world we're engaged in is so contained, it's easy for us to become inwardly focused. we can find ourselves thinking almost exclusively about how all this is impacting me, my household, my extended family. But Jesus is walking with us. He's opening our eyes to see what's happening in a new way. There may never have been a better opportunity than now to show Christ-inspired hospitality to those around us. This time encourages us to take the church to where the people are. Our attitude and action can bear witness that the way we live our lives is because Jesus Christ guards and guides our heart, filling us with expansive mercy and generous love to share with the world.